Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. All right, welcome everybody. We're back to The Fighting Priests, episode 7 this week. Back here with my good friend, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Niverville still. How's it going, Father?
It's going all right.
Yeah, yeah. Every time we do a podcast, we always say like the same thing.
Yeah.
We want the lockdown to be over, and it's not. Well,
here it's different now. Now, I think in Manitoba, we're in phase 2. So actually this week, what's today? Today's a Wednesday. So on Monday, some jiu-jitsu clubs even open.
Oh, wow.
So kind of a... it's reduced and everything. It's still the first week, so we're seeing how it's going. And then, it's good to hear that. And we're going to have on the weekend, it'll be the Saturday of the Souls, Psycho Sabato, and we're going to have a bunch of people on there actually. So it's not just going to be me, Father Nick, and the chanter and the Neil Coral. So we'll actually have people in there. So it's going to be great. Yeah, on Saturday and Sunday. So it's going to be pretty. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, as we film this, we're at the beginning of June, but this isn't going to air until end of June. So by the time this airs, you know, you're probably going to be training a lot up in Manitoba.
Yeah. Hopefully things will be even better by the time this airs. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be still waiting because it looks like, I don't know, there's no word here in Toronto on that when the gyms or the clubs will open. It seems like those things have been relegated to phase 3 here, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so we're waiting, and I'm doubtful whether we're going to get in there. Maybe we don't know. We don't even know if we're going to get in there in the summer. So
yeah,
that's disappointing, but you know, we're making it work. Some good news. My son, George, he got promoted to a belt. So that was,
oh, yes, I saw that. Congratulations to him.
Yeah, he was very, you know, he was white belt. And, you know, as I had said, our club is still doing like technique and drills and everything like that through Zoom with all the kids. And it's actually quite amazing. You know, he's got like 50 kids, 60 kids on one Zoom meeting. Yeah. And he's training them, and they're learning their technique quite a bit. You know, of course I do exercise with him as well in the living room. And then they actually test them. Like they call out the kids individually. They, you know, our instructor, like he asks them to perform different techniques, and then they do them, and then he actually awards according to or promotes according to their ability, right? So it's the same as if they were in person and they have their partner in their home, either a sibling or a parent. So yeah, he was a white belt. He was a 3-stripe white belt, so he just jumped from there. He went to gray stripe, so he went over to the club and got to see his instructor. He missed him, and so it was a big ego boost for him, because you know, it's hard to get kids motivated sitting in their house all the time.
Yeah.
And it's more work, and yeah, no, he's been working hard. So I'm very happy for him, because it gives him motivation to keep going. So yeah, it's good. And the other little ones want to join as well now. So his siblings. Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to have to go gi shopping for a little Angelo who's 5, and George's twin sister, Katerina, she might, we don't know yet, but the little guy, definitely he'll be joining the Munchkin class as soon as the club's open. So I sense a lot more. I foresee a lot more time at the club in the fall.
It's good to hear.
Yeah. So a topic that I want to talk about this week, you know, we were thinking about something that we had mentioned in some previous podcasts, and that was the idea of having strength as a Christian. We spoke about this, I think, 2 episodes ago, when we were talking about our pacifism, Christianity and pacifism, and the idea of being strong and having abilities, but also knowing when to show restraint and when to use them. And that got me thinking when we were speaking about that a few episodes ago about the Beatitudes, because we were speaking about Blessed are the Meek in that episode. And we were speaking about how meekness is, you know, not just being docile or being, you know, a pacifist, but rather being gentle. One could translate it as being gentle. having strength, having the ability, but knowing when to restrain it, when to not use it, and when to use it for the greater good of ourselves and also for those around us. So I started reading the Beatitudes, Father Thomas, and I was looking at them, and I was especially in the Gospel of Matthew, and I noticed that, you know, there are quite a few Beatitudes that kind of can be applied not only to the spiritual life, but have very much to do with the idea of having power or having ability. And so I kind of wanted to like take a look at some of those today, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So we spoke about being meek. So I don't know how long we can kind of unpack that some more, because you know, the idea of meekness is interesting, but kind of connected with blessed.
What verse is that in the meek?
So we find that actually in Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 12. Those are all the Beatitudes together. I was only taking a look at about four of them. The first one, so we can go through them and kind of take a look at them. Jesus says, when he's on the Sermon on the Mount, and he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So that's the entirety of the Beatitudes. The blessed of the meek, which I was mentioning before, is verse 5. So chapter 5, verse 5. "For they shall inherit the earth." So yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's like the meek are the ones who inherit the earth. That was interesting to me. Like, why do they get to inherit the earth? You know, why that connection? No thoughts?
I don't have any thoughts on that. I always wondered that. I remember a long time ago when I was a teenager or an adolescent, one of my friend's older brothers had this Nike shirt, and it was a football shirt or something. And it was like, it had this verse on there. And then at the bottom, it was like sarcastic. It was sarcastic though. It was like, and then it concluded, "Yeah, right." So it was like this Nike shirt. It was going towards, I guess, a dominator type mindset.
Oh, because the people assume that meek is weak, right?
Yeah.
Meek is weak. That's a good t-shirt. But it's not. I don't, when I read that, what comes to mind is, and going along with what we were speaking about before in the last episodes, is that if a meek person is a gentle person, and if a gentle person is not necessarily weak, but rather a person who knows out of compassion, out of love for their neighbor, and respect, knows when to wield power properly and when not to, when to exercise authority and when not to, right? Yeah. When to fight and when not to fight, mm-hmm. when to stand and when to run, all those kind of, then, you know, perhaps when it says here, you know, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth," perhaps those are the best people to rule.
Yeah, I think so. I looked up here in the Greek, the prais, and it says, in bideg, "to not be overly impressed by a sense of one's self-importance, gentle, humble, considerate, meek."
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're considerate, that's qualities you want to see in leadership and in anyone that you spend your time around. Hopefully you'd want to be surrounded by considerate people.
Sure. And humility, of course, one of the cornerstones of Christian theology, cornerstone of the virtues. You know, if I have somebody who's put an authority over me, whether they be a politician, whether they be a king, whether they be a law enforcement officer, whether they be somebody, a teacher, anybody who has authority in society, I would feel much more comfortable with a humble person, with a person who's comfortable with who they are, mm-hmm. who doesn't have anything to prove, and also who is responsible with the authority that's been given to them. And that's something that I've really noticed within the world of jiu-jitsu, and especially the people that I've met. I've noticed that, at least in my club and everywhere, like in just visiting other places as well and meeting other people from other clubs, I find that the majority of the people that I meet in the world of jiu-jitsu, they are very, often they're very humble. Like, of course you're going to have people who are not, but the, mm-hmm. the majority of them, and especially the people who are much more advanced, who are kind of helping out the younger, the lower belts and people who are new, I find that they're not there to kind of, you know, show off what they know, but rather to share their knowledge and to help you progress so that also you don't get hurt, so that you grow as a practitioner. And I don't know, that's the thing that comes to mind is meekness. That some of the best jiu-jitsu, you know, practitioners that I've met are extremely humble. They're not very full of themselves.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of this video on the BJJ Fanatics Facebook group someone posted on the weekend. There was this video. I don't know if you saw it. I think it must be two white belts, two females. I think one must be like a young woman or a woman, and the other one looked like an adolescent female. Like, and she's scooting, and then the one standing, and she pushes her face really hard. And then they end up in the scramble, and the small girl on the bottom gets this triangle. And the girl in the guard, she's pinning the right arm of the smaller girl and stacking her. So now it's like, and the way her legs were, it was like she was stuck. So even if once she taps, she's going to be stuck in that position now until she herself takes the pressure, like the whole thing, right? And she kind of tipped the balance forward. So her shoulders are far over her knees. And she taps, and then eventually she lets go of the hold when she can. And first thing she says, this girl, this is a sore loser, right? The opposite of meekness. She says, "When I tap, you need to let go. When I tap, you need to let go." And it's like this issue. And the girl's with the ponytail, she stands up and she looks like a little child. Like, it's such a weird video. And then she kind of looks to her corner, and then the poor sport walks around the ref, and she says again, you need to let go when I tap. And then they kind of ends the video, and it shows that someone had commented in the group. They said, either that girl is going to learn, or she's going to end up quitting, right? She has the wrong attitude to advance if that's the way she's thinking. Like, obviously it's in the moment, but sometimes in the moment we reveal our true selves that we sometimes try to hide.
I would say always in the moment.
Our
true selves, right? Yeah. It's, we have like personalities in our gym as well. And, you know, some people are just obsessed with advancing or obsessed with getting promoted, or, you know, that always happens. Or, you know, let's say you go to a grading and let's say you get overlooked, and some people get upset. Some people they feel like they've been snubbed or they've been forgotten, and they get really upset. And I've heard, like, you know, both instructors and also other, you know, higher belts who are more, you know, experienced and a little more seasoned, tell these people, it's like, you know, why are you getting so upset? You know, A, does it make you a better jiu-jitsu fighter? Like, you know, whether you have the belt or not? No, it's not, right? It's a recognition of where you were at, but it doesn't make you any better of your skill. You know, the skill set that you have at this moment is the skill set that you have. So, you know, you'll be given whatever you're going to be given, and the recognition will come when it's time. And part of what some instructors look for is not just the ability, but character. A lot of instructors have told me this.
Oh yeah, that was, if you can find Hilo Gracie's original qualifications for it to be an instructor, be promoted, there's a lot of us who would not pass the ethical or character requirements that Hilo Gracie kind of looked for.
Yeah. You know, and I'm glad to see that a lot of instructors still have that kind of mentality that, you know, it's not just ability. Of course, you need to be able to, you know, perform at a certain level, to execute certain techniques, to have a certain knowledge, a certain understanding of the history of jiu-jitsu, to understand the philosophy. There's a lot of different things that people get graded on, and different instructors have different emphases in their clubs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the character of the person and how hard they work, and also how humble they are. Like, do they come to work or do they come to show off? Things like that. Mm-hmm. They are often taken into consideration by instructors. So yeah, perhaps the meek are the ones who will inherit the earth, because they're the ones who should be inheriting the earth. The ones who should be running things, not the arrogant, not the ones who want to wield power for their own gain. So
yeah, the opposite of meekness, that the power for your own gain, is what kind of led to the situation that we're all in currently right now with the George Floyd protests. So
well, yeah, you know, and that kind of leads me to like the next beatitude that I was looking at. It's interesting you brought up George Floyd, which is, you know, for our listeners, well, I'm pretty sure everybody who's listening to this has heard of George Floyd. You know, he's an African-American man who was killed by a police officer in the United States. And you know, and it just happened now at the beginning, you know, end of May, beginning of June, and it caused all these riots and protests, and of course, it's also exacerbated by the lockdown and people being upset. Like it's much more, I think, potent, and the anger is much stronger now across the world because you have protests everywhere about this, about police brutality and things like that. And of course, that just got me thinking about, you know, the other beatitude, which is blessed are the peacemakers, you know, and for they should be called sons of God. Blessed are the peacemakers. And that's in chapter 5, verse 9. It's a little further down. Peacemaking and meekness, for me, they seem to go hand in hand. You know, the person who is meek is going to look for the creation of peace around them, not conflict. And even when there is conflict, they're going to look to diffuse the conflict and be able to create reconciliation again. And so I was thinking about these things, and I know you probably have some thoughts about this one. You had mentioned this in a couple of episodes ago when you were talking about how, you know, police are not trained very well. And a lot of jujitsu practitioners have mentioned this as well, that if police were trained better, and especially maybe in the art of jujitsu, which is, you know, the most effective way of subduing people, that it would be safer both for the perpetrators that they are attempting to apprehend or to stop from doing violence or any kind of other, you know, negative action in society, but to be able to subdue them and take them into custody with the least amount of force and also with the least amount of danger, both to themselves, because of course police officers are in danger as well, but also to the human being, because we see in the case of George Floyd that, you know, the man, you know, there were a lot of police officers there, but the one who was subduing him at that moment, you know, had his knee on his neck, which was not a very...
Well, if you watch the video from the other angle, there's two other police officers on him as well.
Yeah.
So that's three. That's why today, finally, they raised the charges on the main officer to second-degree murder, and then the other two that were on him, and then Officer Tao, the one with, I believe, however you pronounce it, was the one who's standing there. All of them also have been charged today as well now, so...
Yeah.
So hopefully the protest will stop. I believe I read if you were looking for like a goal of these protests for the actual people who are protesting, not the rioters and looters, is to upgrade these charges. And now that happened today. So hopefully this can come to a resolution for the time being.
Yes. I think, time will tell, because it is much more nuanced. And yes, there is a lot of, it's a perpetual problem, right? Police brutality has been an issue for many, many years.
Well, yeah, look at the 1992 riots, the 1968. There's people forget. I think one of the big problems with our society now is people say we're in a post-truth society. We're also with that. We're in a post-literate society. Just think about how many people you know who don't read. So they don't read anything, at all. I know people graduating from high school and they're like, I didn't read anything in high school. I didn't read anything after high school. I didn't read anything I was supposed to for any courses I took in university if they went. So people don't know anything about their own history on this continent, whether it's the United States or whether it's Canada. People don't know anything. And it's crazy.
And it's not just history. It's also all the other kind of, I guess you say the classics, right? So you would be taught philosophy. Even in high school in the old days, you'd be taught languages, you'd be taught philosophy, you'd be taught, so, you know, Aristotelian logic, Platonic
theory. Yeah, critical thinking. People aren't taught to think critically. This is what, love him or hate him, one of the things David Bentley Hart talks about too, is that people, he's like, I'm thankful I had a classical education. I learned about the classics. Like, I always told my wife that when I first started studying ancient Greek, I would find these ancient Greek readers or Kine Greek readers, and whether it's Lucian or some other, like a pagan author, and I look at these things, and that's how I started realizing. I was like, Ashley, to my presbyter Ashley, my wife, I was like, this book was written for like people who are in grade 10, and it's in Canada. Like, this, they assumed you learned Latin in the first 2 to 3 years of high school, then depending when high school started, whatever year, then the last 2 years you'd learn ancient Greek, and then if you look at ancient Greek, like classical Greek textbooks from this time period, you'll also see that they already assume you know a lot of stuff. So it's just...
I took Latin. I took Latin in high school.
You had that option.
It was in the 90s, right? It was in the 90s. Yeah. So I went to high school in 94, right? I finished in like 99. And so they were still teaching Latin. I took Latin for 3 years. Mm-hmm. There was no Greek, unfortunately, anymore. That already gone. But, you know, now that doesn't exist. Latin is gone. But Latin was extremely important because it wasn't just the linguistic part of it, but learning about the history, learning about the poetry of the era, learning about the ethics and morality.
Yeah, being exposed to like other ways of thinking in ancient cultures. Yeah. It's so important. I think it was with Ashley a couple of years ago. One of them, we always go to the mountains in the summer, and we were, I think, in Waterton Lakes National Park during Blackfoot days. And I think it was that documentary. It was a documentary. They were playing somewhere. I can't remember what it's called. But I believe it was that documentary. And the woman, because I think they were filming a head smashed in Buffalo Jump, which is kind of north of Waterton Lakes National Park in southern Alberta. And she was saying, this First Nations woman was speaking, she was saying, education is our spirit walk now. That's how we're going to emancipate ourselves is through educating ourselves. And it reminds me later on in life, it reminds me of what St. Cosmas said when he was trying to re-educate the Greeks who were under the Turkish yoke. He was saying, you need to learn your culture, learn your history, learn the scriptures and the original languages. And these are the things that are going to free us from the Turkish yoke, whether it's physically or to slow change over time by people being more and more aware of what the reality is.
Yeah. And this type of formation is largely absent. And of course, when the general formation of understanding of history, appreciation of history, appreciation of morality, ethics, critical thinking, all these things that come from classical kind of education, when that is absent from our modern society, then of course you're going to have, you know, these types of more frequent, you know, events of these kind of things happening. Because, you know, you have people, of course, who are on the side of that it's racially motivated and it's a racial issue, right? And I have, don't get me wrong, I don't have an opinion on that because I don't know enough about the situation to know. But even in situations where it's not racially, for example, when it's like it's a mistake or it's an accident, right? And somebody gets killed, or it's negligence, or it's, you know, or for example, the officer uses extreme force when they shouldn't, regardless of who they are, just because that's their personality, or maybe they haven't, you know, they're an aggressive person. In all those situations, a good formation is important. And in all those situations, knowing a little jiu-jitsu would have been important because, you know, you could, I think that it would definitely help in protecting both the person being apprehended and the person also doing the apprehending, right? So, mm-hmm. That's why I thought about this. It's this idea of peacemaking. You know that it's a very difficult business, peacemaking. Like, you know, like how do you you know, diffuse situations? And like you said, you know, there's so many videos online of finding a, you know, breakdown of street fights and things like that, or situation conflicts that get caught on TV, and you know, different instructors online, you know, kind of break down the fight. The Gracies do this all the time.
Yeah.
So, well, this could have happened this way if you just knew how to do this. And you know what's really interesting is that even you turn it around, like look at it from the point of view of the person who's being subdued, right? So you look at it from George Floyd's point of view. Mm-hmm. Yes, obviously, if you're being arrested, it's never a good thing to resist arrest, right? You know, you don't want to like exacerbate a situation, make it worse. But if you are trained, you might be able to protect yourself mm-hmm. against even if the law enforcement is the aggressor, right? You might be able to somehow stop what's happening to you, that at least you can survive. So all around, a martial arts education, also you know, a classical education, I think would be good for society all around, I think.
It reminds me of an earlier beatitude, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, right? Because if you are trained in how to hurt someone, you could say, and you decide not to, you're showing mercy, right? And the people, it's interesting because the person doesn't even know the situation they just walked into. I'm listening to a podcast right now. No, I think I listened to a clip of Joe Rogan's podcast. He was talking about poor parenting, and later on in the thing, it went on how he was at a, I think Eddie Bravo, Tate Fletcher, and someone else, they're out for some drinks or whatever, maybe some fights, and they're going back to the hotel room, and this drunk guy shows up and he's like, this is my room, right? And they're like, sorry. And it was Tate's room. Tate's like, no, this is not your room. And he uses his key lock, right? The card to get in to show him this is my room. He goes, no, this is my room. And he wants to fight. Like, this guy just walks into the situation when you have like three or more highly trained martial artists. And this is just some big drunk belligerent guy. And so they defuse the situation. Like, I think Tate ended up having to put the guy to sleep, but he could have done way worse things to the guy. Like, when you're, I've been in fights in my previous life before I joined the church, but I've never been in a fight since I've been in the church as a lay person. And, or even since I started training jiu-jitsu, there's only one time I've had to use, I decided to use to my skills, but it didn't really require too much skill to defuse a situation. And there was like, I was just thinking as it was occurring, how much I could, there's all these steps, there's like a chest, all your options are laid up before you, how much you could, how much force you could use, how much this you could use, blah, blah, blah. But when you're trained, you don't need to usually need, in my experience, the one experience now, even talking to other people, you don't need to, the level of force you need to use is so minimal when you're with someone who's untrained.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a mercy in itself, because when you understand that you're not there to express the ego, mm-hmm. to show that you're better or, you know, anything that comes from the ego, right? I want to hurt the other person because I want to dominate them. I want to show them that I'm better than them. I want to show off to my friends, whatever. When all that stuff is taken out of the equation, the only thing that remains is how do I not get hurt and how does the other person not get hurt? Mm-hmm. And the bare minimum that I have to do that is usually much less than the bravado that exists when people want to fight. When they, you know, they want to mm-hmm. up their chest and they want to show that they want to hit each other and hurt each other to show how macho they are to their friends or how powerful they are, right? You cut away the inessentials to what do I need to do? Or what's the fastest way to stop this? Mm-hmm. And then that can be very merciful to the other human being who doesn't know. Who might not, like you said, like the person who was they're inebriated, you know, they weren't able to know what they were doing. Okay. They shouldn't have been drunk, right? But at the same time, do they deserve to get beat up by like three other guys who are like black belt jiu-jitsu, right?
Exactly.
Right? It's almost like an adult looking at a little child, and you kind of take pity on them and you say, okay, well, this is beneath us, right? To be able to. Okay. And I think that's really, that can only come with training though. When people don't have training, because fear takes over, anxiety, fight or flight, and when you want to fight but you don't know how, well, this is when it's very dangerous, because you don't have the capacity to slow things down in your mind and to kind of work out the scenario because you haven't trained it. Mm-hmm. You haven't trained that way. And so that's when things become very dangerous. People do things they regret. People do things that are disproportional to the situation, mm-hmm. because they don't know their other options.
Situational awareness, awareness of your skills, awareness of the lack of skills in the person who's instigating the situation, all very important.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you have to walk away from it is the most merciful thing one could do.
Yep.
Knowing that it will be bad all around if
one
engages, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to bearing the insult. Mm-hmm. Is in swallowing our pride is the most merciful thing we can do for the other person, because we're eliminating ourselves from the equation. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that rolls into the fourth beatitude that I was thinking about, which was blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness sake, for the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
It's right after the peacemakers. It's verse 10, because you know, to be righteous often requires persecution. To do the right thing is very difficult to do, right? Swallow your pride, you know?
Yeah, especially if there's people around or women around that can change things, especially in younger men. So it's...
Well, I think in everybody, not just younger men. Like, I agree with you, younger men are more prone, younger people generally. But overall, like even when you're on the mats with people, if it's all ego, then you're not going to learn much. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about this before, about how, you know, failure is, you know, one of the greatest teachers, and we'll be talking about this in upcoming episodes as well, that, you know, tapping teaches you a lot, but in order to kind of keep coming back and keep getting tapped and keep, you know, being dominated, especially when you're in the young, in the lower belts and you don't know a lot of things, it requires a certain amount of humility and a certain willingness to be, it's not persecuted per se, like the people are persecuting you on purpose, but this idea of being dominated, of being kind of like beaten over and over again, and because it creates an endurance in you, it creates patience, it creates fortitude, it creates a strength of character to keep coming back. You know, something I teach my son, it's like my son sometimes, George, when he's training, like he can't get a certain move or he can't do a certain thing, or, and he gets very, very frustrated. He's 8 years old. He gets frustrated and he wants to give up. That's the first default for an 8 year old, give up. And trying to teach him to persevere over and over again is a very difficult thing. It's kind of interesting that my son, he perceives the failure. A lot of times he'll project it. So he'll blame it on other people. Right. So, you know, if he can't do something or gets frustrated, it's either my fault because I distracted him, or it's the instructor's fault because he's giving him too hard of a task to do. Right. It's like, this is a stupid thing. I don't like my instructor because he's asking me to do a stupid thing. I don't want to do it. Right. So they're trying to, you know, project, their inability to do something or to perform a certain technique or action on someone else. That's the ego, of course, you know, controlling everything. And it's hard to kind of try to teach them that, you know, it's okay if you can't do this. It's okay in the sense that you want to get better at it, but you're going to fail over and over. Sometimes you're going to fail like 100 times before you get it right the first time. And that one time that you do get it right, you'll get recognized for it, and then you move on, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting that the day that he got promoted to his new belt, it was one of those days where he was just having a bad day. He was tired. It was a hot day in Toronto. We have no air conditioning in our apartment. We have like some little fans and units, whatever, but it's hot, right? It's miserable inside and we're all stuck inside. So he was having a bad day. He was tired. The class was at like 5:15 at night. He had already had a full day. So he just didn't want to do the class. And he felt that he was being kind of like, you know, he's not ignored, but you know, he felt like just lost in the shuffle, right? Because there's so many kids online. The teacher can't give attention to everybody. And the class was very hard that day. There was a lot of cardio. There was a lot of like, drills at the beginning, even for kids. Like I was watching, I was feeling bad for him. I'm like, this makes me tired too. Right. And so he just wanted to give up and he was crying. He started crying at one point, like halfway through the class, because he just wanted to give up. He says, this is no good for me. I want to quit jujitsu. I want to quit everything. You know, kids are dramatic. Right. And he's just having a bad day. I'm never going to get another stripe on my belt and he's never going to recognize me, all this kind of stuff. Right. So I can't do anything right. So, and that was the class where I had to really kind of encourage him and sternly and say, you know, you gotta keep at this. It's even if you're having a really bad day, right. Tomorrow you'll have a better day. And so he stuck with it after much, much encouragement and debate and talking. And then at the end of the class where he was just so exhausted, then the teacher called out George. He said, George, you know, stand up. And George's like, oh, he's like his eyes open. And then so he says, okay, daddy, lie down, do these moves, right? And he knew the move, he knew the techniques, right? He had to do a knee on belly, he had to demonstrate a knee on belly, he had to demonstrate like a mount, and then he had to demonstrate like a reverse scarf hold and this kind of stuff, right? So he did like three different moves and he did them all perfectly. And then the instructor rewarded him. He said, you know, like you're gonna be promoted, right? And he didn't expect it. But you know, at the end we had to talk about it. And I told him, look, you know, you were this close to quitting. You said, I didn't want to, there was like the worst class you ever had. And you hated it. You were like, the instructor doesn't like me. He's giving me horrible things to do. And he knows I can't do it. And I'm like, trust me, he doesn't know you can't do it. It's not a personal thing. and you wanted to quit, but look, this is the day. If you had quit, I said, and you were telling me to shut the Zoom off and you want to go watch TV and you want to go rest, if you quit, you wouldn't have been promoted and you would have lost everything. He's like, oh, you're right. You know, I'm so glad I didn't quit. it's learning, teaching moments, you know. Mm-hmm. But hopefully he'll remember that next time he wants to quit. Well, on that note, I don't know. I think we should wrap it up today, Father. What do you think?
I agree.
Well, hopefully, as my son grows up, he'll be able to appreciate more not only the idea of persevering, creating endurance, but also like, you know, all the other things that we spoke about in today's episode, the idea of being meek, the idea of, you know, being a peacemaker. You know, he even told me that when he first joined jiu-jitsu, he didn't want to join so that he could beat people up at school, but so that he could be, you know, that so that he could stop people from getting hurt. That was one of his number one goals. Yeah, he said that, you know, he's like, you know, I don't want people to bully me. I don't want people to bully other people. And maybe if I know jiu-jitsu, I can protect people. I said, well, that's a good, noble, you know, goal. Yeah. And so, you know, I should start reading the Beatitudes a little more with him so he can understand kind of how all this connects, because I think it is, you know, having character. This is really what the Beatitudes are about. It's about building character. This is what Christ is trying to teach, at least I think. And, you know, how to live this life with character.
Yeah. I think the Beatitudes as well as Jiu-Jitsu, they both also, they show you how to live a life of honor.
That's a good one. Yeah. Honor. That's the word that I was trying to think of.
Like, it's a big thing that I'm always, what is it in Kinigri, Tithimi? So it's, I always think that way. It's always something I keep in mind, the way people, I think a lot of the problems with society is that a lot of men don't live lives of honor. They really, really don't.
To do what is honorable. Yeah. 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 It's true. Yeah. Pretty much every beatitude has to do with keeping a life of honor, to be honorable, and how that looks and the things that you need to do to achieve that. And really, if you look at jiu-jitsu, you know, it's definitely an honorable sport, an honorable art form, just as from the philosophical point of view. That's why we do it. That's why we enjoy it. Well, Father, thank you very much for another wonderful episode. And we will see you again in 2 weeks for our next episode. And keep safe until then.
All right. I'll talk to you then.
Hopefully you'll be training more by the time we speak again.
Hopefully.
Okay. Take care.
You too.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.